Welcome to the SI Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. No intro, no fooling around this week. Big show, because I've tried to get this guy for about 2 years for an interview. And not only do I have him, but he's kind enough to come into the studio, the legendary multimedia star, John Cena.
Interesting introduction. Thank you very much.
How about it? Well, you're here to promote a children's book.
Yes.
You do movies. You do TV.
Yeah.
WWE superstar.
Yeah.
Reality shows. Mm-hmm. So you are a multimedia superstar. You've rapped.
Yeah. How about that?
How about that?
Yeah.
A multimedia star.
Thank you very much.
Usually Howard Stern's the king of all media. Now we have John Cena.
I am not vying for the spot on the king. I'm just trying to keep a place in the squad. That's all.
So, John, this is funny because I do, you know, if you listen to the SI Media podcast, we have WWE people on often, but John is not here through WWE. He's here to promote a book called
The Random House, promoting Elbow Grease.
Elbow Grease.
Yeah.
How did you get into doing a children's book?
It's a weird 6 degrees of separation to WWE, which is my entire existence. Everything kind of goes back to that nucleus. So there's no denying those folks that pay attention to WWE. My fan base is young. It's usually family-based and very young fans. And the message that I continuously drive home throughout my story arc in WWE is one of hustle, loyalty, and respect, and one of never giving up. And also kind of tossed into the mix are the words rise above hate as well. So I wanted to be able to create a different universe that isn't WWE, because sometimes, and I don't know why, because we are a PG company, but sometimes, you know, I'll hear from parents, I just won't let my kid watch yet. So I wanted to create something for young readers. I'm talking readers, three to six, three to seven, mm-hmm. so they can enjoy the same aspirational conversation in a world that I loved as a kid. And I loved big machinery and I loved monster trucks. I had four brothers, Elbow Grease has four brothers. So it's kind of like a hodgepodge of the message I'm trying to send on WWE mixed with stuff that I enjoyed as a kid, kind of mixed with my upbringing.
Right, so it is a picture book.
Yeah.
Give us a very quick synopsis of what the parents out there can expect from the book, which is out today, by the way.
Yes. So what's great about Elbow Grease, and this is what I think is the best thing that's going to be for young readers and parents reading to their children, it doesn't hit you over the head with a focused topic of discussion. Just naming the truck Elbow Grease instead of Hard Work, because your young reader is going to ask you, hey, what's Elbow Grease? And you can come up with a conversation and a definition of what that is. Elbow Grease's special quality is gumption. So asking, what's gumption? Like you may even have to look that one up yourself. So it inspires conversation between people reading and young readers. And there really isn't any one takeaway. It's in the book that Elbow Grease never gives up, which is a very important message. But he's different than all of his brothers. He gets bullied. He doesn't conform to the way that they want him to be. Like, there's a lot of cool messaging in there, and it's all really easy to read. Like I said, young readers 3 to 7. So it is a picture book, and it's set in a very wonderfully illustrated, imaginative world. But there's a lot of takeaways there that if you're a parent and you decide, I want to focus on this with my child, you can. So I think that's excellent.
So how does it come about that you get a children's book? Is it through WWE? I mean,
no, I was approached to write an autobiography, and I don't want to do that.
Do you not want to do that yet, or you don't want to do that ever?
I'm in the WWE way of doing business, sir. You never say never. So it's not time for me to do that yet.
Right.
But I really did want to do something, and when breaking down the chain of supply and demand, like I said, the demand is from young people, and they seem to gravitate towards the message. So if I could do something that a company like Random House is asking me to do, we would like to do a book and at the same time send a great message to young readers, I think that's pretty special.
Yeah. It's pretty, your versatility is impressive. I mean,
well, I'm not afraid to fail and I'm not afraid to try new things. I think we get comfortable in, I'm good at this, so I'm just going to do this. I have failed tremendously, but I just keep on trying, and amazingly enough, that's kind of the ethos of Elbow Grease as well.
Is it a conscious thing for you, though, that you want to be as diverse as possible?
No, I just go after stuff that I enjoy. Like, I didn't search making a book. The book people found me,
right.
And their original offer was an autobiography, to which wasn't a cold shoulder no. It was a no, but let's figure out something to do. And then we sat down and spoke and checked out what the best solution would be, and now we have Elbow Grease. And that's just one example of all the things that I'm trying my hand at, and some are successful and some aren't. And that's, you just have to not be afraid to fail and enjoy what you do.
Maybe it's my own immaturity. I just find it amusing. You've gone from a movie called Cock Blockers to a children's book.
Well, there's, and this is another thing. Like, don't get stuck in one phase. Right. It's so very difficult for WWE superstars to transcend WWE, which is why I applaud Dwayne Johnson, because we do our jobs so well that society knows you for nothing else.
Right.
So I think taking chances like that, and I know for a fact there aren't too many 3 to 7 year olds that are going to watch Blockers because you need parental consent.
Right.
But it does. I don't want to alienate the adult audience. I'm a 41-year-old man. Right. I have an adult sense of humor. So once again, doing what I love, telling jokes with very funny people and making a goof of myself. Right. Like, I enjoy that, so there's no reason I shouldn't do it. And if a certain audience looks down on me or you know, I don't think
anyone looks down on you.
But that's the thing. I mean, why not do it all?
Right, exactly.
As long as I enjoy it all. That's my point.
Yeah. I think we've done a good job plugging the book. We'll plug it more, but let's talk about some other things. I want to ask...
Your show, man. Talk about what you want.
Exactly. What is John Cena's status with WWE right now? I know you just did the show in Australia a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Are you on like a part-time contract, full-time? They call you when they need you. I know you're doing a movie in China.
No, I think this is the best way to put it. I am very conscious of how long I have been in WWE, and 15 years as a fully functional performer, I believe, is a time span that is in rare company.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
If you look at my story arc over the last few years, I would, I hate looking back. I like to look at the future, but this is only to put it in context. My last major event was versus The Rock in New York. And since then, I've been utilized as a vehicle to try to enhance new talent, which is great, but that's been going on for 3 or 4 years now. But even with the 3 or 4 years, I still have the reputation of being the one who holds back new talent. Mm-hmm. So if I'm consistently there, and it's very difficult to adapt new talent to the program because... maybe for a subliminally that they rely on me for certain reasons. Taking myself out of that equation puts them in a position where they have to develop new talent. And I've tried my best to enhance new talent and develop them myself. But even when I'm in the running for the United States Championship, I love what I do and try to make it the best I possibly can. So with the U.S. Open, man, that became a wonderful piece of television,
right?
Or hey, we want you to go to WrestleMania as a fan.
That's one of the
storylines I'm the most proud of.
Yeah,
because it sent a message, basically not my final message because I'm not done, but final on the way of full time performing, where you shouldn't consider yourself too big for any role.
Yeah,
and I really wanted to get that message across to the young performers and challenge myself to try to make that entertaining.
But you said a few seconds ago about a reputation for holding talent back. Mm. Do you think that you still have that reputation, or you think that's dissipated a little bit?
I don't care about the reputation I have. What I care about is the performance I give. Mm-hmm. But the easiest way to just silence that problem is take me out of the equation. Here's the crazy thing. All the people that have chastised me for staying around too long are now chastising me for not being around.
Right, right, right.
So also a great exercise in, like, you'll never be able to please these people because they always need something to be cynical about. I guess that's why they're called critics. But I'm very happy now because it truly is, it's like it was in 2002 when Randy and Dave and Brock and myself and Shelton and those guys came up and everybody left. We changed the name of the company. The XFL had failed. A bunch of superstars left, and now you're left with these new guys. And it's like sink or swim. Mm-hmm. And we just happened to have a very, very talented group of individuals, and it was a long, long swim. I mean, the stock was at $7 for a long time, right. And now the fruits of our labor have kind of shown, and the company is bigger than it's ever been. So I'm very excited for all the superstars now. I hope they understand in perspective, as Randy is towards the end of his run. Dave's obviously having tremendous success in the movie business. He's another guy that's transcended the industry, mm-hmm. that deserves his just due. my days as a full-timer are certainly numbered. And that's has nothing to do with extracurricular activities. I can't, as a 41-year-old, I can't do it. If you look at anybody in my shoes, Chris Jericho had taken a break. Hogan certainly had taken a break. I think the only guy that may fall into that category of not taking a break is Flair. But Austin had already been done. Rock was already
Flair
done.
Flair did retire at one point.
So, I mean, people are like, well, where are you going, man? Right. Like, I'm 41.
I should ask you instead of assuming, but just based on, obviously, your physique and your working. You can't feel 41,
I'm in the best shape of my life. Yeah. But now, as a, you know, you're young and you think you're indestructible, and then you get this job and you think that, like, it is a dream come true, and you never want the dream to end.
Right.
And I'm super grateful for everything that I've done. But as a 41-year-old man, especially someone who's had his attitude change about a lot of things in life, mm-hmm. one of those things is, how am I going to get around when I'm 70?
Right.
How am I going to get around when I'm 80?
Right.
I can't look at 41 being like, well, I'm lucky if I make it past this year. I'm trying to do the best I can to live as healthy as I can. And I know for a fact, like, that a full-time WWE schedule is a young man's game.
If you right now at 41 had a full-time schedule, what would take the bigger toll on you? The actual performing in the ring or the traveling? Because the travel schedule you guys are on is absurd.
It would just be the amount of hours in the day. So to give you an example, at 26 or 32, I could literally just show up and go. Mm-hmm. And now I have to wake up every morning and break a sweat for 20 minutes and then stretch for 35 minutes to get through a day of sitting down and doing interviews. So repeat that process on a day of a performance, then go work out, then go do it before a match, and then go cool down after a match, and then add all the logistics into everything.
Right.
It's not that I can't go. I think that the quote is, I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. That's why all the elder statesmen, should we say, can come back and perform at a high level once,
right,
or twice,
right,
or a few times. And I think that's where I fit best now, because the days aren't long enough for me to do it 5 days a week. You end up, but when I was younger, it was easy. You show up, you perform, you move to the next one, because
right,
you don't feel any, like, you're bulletproof.
Right, right.
But now, in taking care of myself, and I've had a wonderful career, and my career's not over. It's changing, it's evolving. But my main concern now is my overall long-term health. And I've changed up my strength training. I don't use as much heavy weights as I used to. I still do all the same basic movements, but I'm not sitting under 270 kg for a squat. Like, I don't care about that.
Yeah.
I care about the next 30 years of my life.
What is there an injury? Is there a severe injury you've had that you still feel the effects of? Or do you?
No. I'm great.
Yeah, great. Right.
Literally, like, right. I feel great. That's me physically.
It's just father
me
time.
As a spiritual person, and it's not father time. I wanna wage war against
right.
father time as
right.
long as I can, and I don't. And it's not the wrestling. It's not the in-ring performance.
It's everything.
It's everything.
Right.
And everything that has to do with a 5-day week and 1 day off, repeat 52 weeks a year. I hate when people are like, I did my time. I'm grateful for being able to be asked to do that. I'm also, and I need to say this, I am super grateful to the WWE for having understanding that I may need to take some time to reevaluate my life.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
like, that's huge on them. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you say all this, as we're about 13, 14 hours removed from 53-year-old Shawn Michaels basically coming back as he...
Yeah.
You know, it's...
No, but that's what's great about WWE. It is sports entertainment.
Right.
In pure sport, if you're going to run the 100 meter at 53 years old, I'm not going to pencil you into the top three. in baseball, it's the same thing, where the object is purely... fastest man wins or strongest man wins. We are entertainers. So as long as you can be entertaining, you have life. And I think that's very important, because it gives guys, and I will say this, and you'll hear it from anyone with an opinion who's ever been out in that ring. There is no feeling like being in the ring. Absolutely. It is the best feeling in the world. And if I could do it 7 days a week, and that's why I did it 7 days a week for so very long. And that's why I still speak so highly of the company that I love and I will always love. And it's my family. But I just have to focus on.
Now, everything you've said, I believe 100%. You're convincing. There's no reason not to believe everything you've said. But when you say this to Vince, is Vince just right off the bat gives you his blessing to go do your other thing and come back periodically? Or is Vince like, listen, you're John F. and Cena, we want you full time?
No, I think there's certainly thoughts of that, but riddle me this. So I stay full time and continue these middle of the road storylines, which I've been in and proud to be in, that don't necessarily move me forward, or they have the general conception of not moving the talent that I'm trying to develop forward. And that's the most painful thing. You invest all this time and labor into this guy, and whether it's something simple like the promos with Roman, letting Roman know that there is another level to the game. And if you don't step up to that level, you don't have the right to call yourself someone at that level. That's what my job with Roman was supposed to be.
Right.
And the great thing about Roman was he understood that and was open to it. And you want to talk about being vulnerable, he let it all hang out there. He got his teeth knocked in out there verbally and shot back with one of what I thought was his best performances.
Right.
So over the story arc of 5 weeks, he did learn.
Right.
But
there was a great moment, and I asked Roman about this when he was on this podcast a few months ago, but there was a great moment in, well, not great probably for him, but for viewers it was amusing, where he forgot his lines at one point and you didn't miss a beat and, you know, encourage him to, like, you know, you got to keep going.
Trust me, those are moments where, like, we are entertaining the customer, the consumer. And if you're going, and that's another thing, if you're going to say you are at a certain level, that's the worst endorsement you can give yourself, because you have to be at that level. And fans will, especially WWE fans, man, they're scrutinizing me about my haircut. Like, that's, they will get at you about anything and everything. So especially if you say I'm a top level performer and perform sub top, they have every right to be like, remember when you said this, it's not exactly who you are. But I believe Roman is that. And it was just my job to really try to bring that out of him. And I think, like I said, there was there was some slip ups at the beginning.
Fans ate that up.
I really think towards the end it was one of his best emotional investments in a program that he's been in.
I said this to John before we started, and I feel like Roman gets such a bum rap because I've interviewed him a bunch of times. He's really great on these podcasts, has a great personality. I asked him about flubbing his line. He got mad. He gave a great answer. You know, I think it's a little ridiculous at the WWE universe.
Roman has it tough. Keep in mind, and I kind of ruined this for everybody. I didn't. The content, the format change did. Attitude Era was males 18 to 35. And our program still draws heavy attraction from males 18 to 35. But we're a PG program.
Yeah.
Which means your audience is a six-year-old. And I don't say don't cater to the 18 to 35-year-olds, but you have to understand your audience starts at six or younger. So you have to give them essentially Shrek or Cars or the Lego movie. And sometimes 18 to 35-year-old dudes don't want to watch the Lego movie.
Right.
So
I feel like you try to push it a little bit.
You have to try to push,
yeah.
But don't think there's not a second that goes by in my mind that our audience isn't six.
Yeah.
And if you watch how I perform in the ring, how I talk, even the fact, like, I remember a match with AJ Styles in Los Angeles, the crowd being so for AJ and against me. And I wanted to be able to entertain the audience, and the element is right in front of me. So the audience got to me that night. And the first thing I did in my post-match interview was apologize for losing my cool. Because I want to send that message to the six-year-old,
right.
But I don't want to rob the live entertainment of the experience.
Right.
So now you have this, our audiences are so mixed. So there's never going to be a good guy that appeals to everyone.
Yeah.
And nowadays it doesn't matter whether it be Roman, take Roman out of the equation and put in someone else. The next guy after them, even if it's someone who the fans endorse and then become the guy, it's a thing where, like, okay, you as a company are going with this guy? No, you're not, because we get to choose. But this was your choice a little bit ago. Nope.
Right.
You got to remember, when Roman was with the Shield, everybody loved him.
Right, right.
And he didn't really change much. He was soft-spoken. He didn't speak a lot. His actions spoke for him. He performs incredibly well. He speaks much better now. He's much more comfortable in his role. I think his presence is phenomenal. Yet there's this giant uprising, and I think a lot of it is because you can't tell us what to like.
Right.
And that's okay. That's okay for a fan. It's just tough waters to navigate as a company, and it's also tough to try to build stars, because even if someone has an underground sort of or an anti-establishment sort of following, eventually you become the establishment.
Right.
And then what?
Right.
So you can't, there's no long-term sustainability just because of the reaction of the audience. Yeah. But to me, you always just have to look at your consumer and you have to look at the analytics. People really like Roman Reigns and the numbers are there to prove it.
Do you think you'd be at WrestleMania this year? I know you missed
SummerSlam. I hope I'm at WrestleMania every year.
Yeah. I know you missed SummerSlam for
I've been in China. That's the only thing.
I know. Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's a great video of you on YouTube in China eating the food and...
Yeah. So I've literally been living there since.
So give me like a little taste of your schedule here, because so you were did you go to Australia from China?
No. So I've been in Australia since June.
Oh, okay.
And I have a visa there that's only so many days, so you have to get out of the country to come back in. And this book was coming out,
right.
So they let me, because I was right up into the money on my visa, they let me come back to America. I had a few sponsorship obligations with. Some sponsors that I had to fulfill. Fulfilled those, literally shot a commercial all day Thursday into the night, jumped on the 1040 to Melbourne, landed in Melbourne at 9:30 in the morning, got to the hotel, got to the building, broke a sweat, stretched, went out, did my thing. It was a very wonderful evening. I thank Bobby Lashley for really helping me out as a teammate. I think those who saw the show understand what that means. And then took a plane back here, and now we have a week's worth of Elbow Grease promotion, and then I'm back to China.
Unbelievable. I appreciate this because you did the Today Show before this and you're doing Fallon after this. And
yeah,
somehow I'm in with that group.
And we're doing a couple signings in between. Yeah. And so, I mean, it's interesting times. Like you said, it's trying out new things. I'm living in a new country. Like I'm doing this children's book for the first time. So I am really chasing my passions.
Now, not to kiss your ass because you're here, but you've been phenomenal since the minute you've gotten here to do this podcast. Do you ever get sick of doing interviews? Do you ever
I think I'm tremendous.
You do a lot.
That's okay. And amazingly enough, with everything that I do, I think I'm tremendously misunderstood. And because people are so used to what they see on television.
What's the biggest misconception?
They think that I am what they see on television.
But I think on television, you seem like a good guy and a funny guy and lighthearted.
But once again, the perception of that is up to the viewer. Like the perception that... I hold talent back.
Right, right, right.
I never once have done that. I just go out and do my thing. Mm-hmm. But someone can look at the character John Cena and have disdain for that, or disdain that I'm not performing as a bad guy.
Right.
And that's the root of their criticism, or that I don't do great maneuvers. And that is the guy you see and makes him, I don't like this guy.
Right.
They're all entitled to their opinion. But man, I wish I could sit down and break down what we do. And I love talking about WWE. I'm obsessed with it, absolutely obsessed with it. And I love talking about like embracing the uncomfortable and going after stuff that you're passionate about.
What question are you sick of being asked by interviewers?
Not one.
Not one.
Not one.
Not even the hair thing is getting to you anymore.
No, I just got the hair.
I know, it's ridiculous.
I just got the hair.
But when I said on Twitter yesterday, the day before I'm interviewing John Cena, if anyone has questions, I'll try to squeeze them in. And it was all about the hair.
Yeah, yeah. And that just goes to show how much we cherish these characters that come into our living room every week.
Yeah.
Because I went out, I have to grow my hair for the role. And
so you're growing your hair for a role for what you're shooting in
the
China?
The movie I'm currently filming, okay. So I cannot cut it because I still have 2 months left.
Right.
And I show up as John Cena, but I don't look like John Cena.
Right.
And that made a lot of people angry, like viscerally angry, which is really cool because, and I said this on the Today Show, in doing the book tour, I'm speaking to a lot of young readers,
right.
And if the conversation of cyberbullying ever comes up, I literally can look at my Twitter feed and show them, like, hey, this is a real thing, happens to everybody. People make fun of the way I look all the time.
Right.
I choose to laugh at myself a little bit and deal with it with positivity.
So I think, because every day the story was changing, I think you're single right now. What do the women think of the hair? That's the question.
Man, as a 41-year-old dude who's literally just trying so many new things in life, I'm embracing the fact that for the longest I've been insecure about the way I look and my hair or whatever.
That's crazy.
No, it's not.
I know it's not.
Body dysmorphia is a real thing.
Yeah.
Everybody struggles with it.
Yeah.
I just lost 20 pounds in China, and man, did I get heat for that. Like, that was the thing before the hair. Like,
but I mean, you're going to get heat for anything because you're just so big. I mean, it can't.
Well, not necessarily.
I don't mean big size wise.
No. And by the way, thank you for the compliment. If I stay in my comfort zone, mm-hmm. if I continue to walk the earth in jorts, a ball cap, a t-shirt, and wave my hand in front of my face, I will hear the same critiques.
Right.
You only do five moves. You hold people
well,
back.
Well, jorts are this, a little bit that. Of a problem.
But that's comfortable for people. The only things I've been criticized about as of late are the changes I've made to myself. So I just encourage people out there not to listen to any of that
right.
BS. I'm starting from me. You know, as celebrities in the public eye, we often want to keep that comfortability because we don't want to ruin the dream.
It's probably the only good thing, I think, about getting older is that you care less about
zero
what
F's to
think.
Give.
Yes. When you're, you know, when you're in your 20s, you care. In your 30s,
you got a lot of F's to give.
Right. When you're in your 30s,
it gets kind of cut in
40,
half.
You don't give a fuck.
Zero F's.
Right.
Zero F's.
Right.
So, and that's, here I am at 40 with a bunch of wisdom I wish I could pass to a younger me.
Right.
But that's a very important message. Just and I try to send this through my social channels. Be comfortable with you, love yourself, and then go out and just live life.
All right. Since you mentioned the social channels, let me get to that. That's one of
the topics on
my list here. The Instagram.
Yeah.
You do that all yourself.
Or the Gram, as
the Gram.
Some people refer to it as.
You do that all yourself.
Yes.
And Twitter, you do all yourself.
Yes.
I might have to check your phone. Celebrities, when it's that, what's the word? Like, your Twitter is very, you know, inspirational quotes.
Yes.
You don't respond to anyone, which is smart.
No, that's just by choice. It's not smart. I think you can engage in great conversation with people.
Not on Twitter.
I think
not when you're that big and on Twitter. It's a
problem.
No,
I really think you can. As long as you're accountable for everything you say, just like we're having a conversation here
right.
that is going to go into the Twitter ethos
right.
and people are going to quote us and comment on us.
Right.
I feel comfortable with everything I'm saying to you. I'm accountable for everything that I've said and everything I will say. So what's the difference?
All right. So your Twitter is pretty straightforward. There's some good quotes. You had a quote about recently I thought was interesting about taking time for yourself.
Yeah.
It's not all about just the hustle, and you're realizing that now.
Rest is important.
Now, your Instagram is different.
Yes.
Give me the philosophy behind the IG.
You can read it in the description.
Tell me how you get a post.
It's going to be a road to nowhere, but keep talking.
How do you come up with what you put on Instagram? Is it that morning? Is it planned out?
No, there is meaning to everything that people check out. And some of it is formulaic and some of it has a pattern. And I think those who follow it will be able to see the formulaic pattern. But
now, sometimes you'll post something timely, like something's in the news and you'll post a photo that's sort of roundabout.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
I mean,
I post images.
Images.
That you can interpret as you see fit.
Yeah, Burt Reynolds. That's a straightforward, you know, Burt pass. You posted a picture of Burt Reynolds.
Or I could have watched Smokey and the Bandit that time.
Right. But then there's just.
Or a myriad of other things.
But there's a lot of them I don't get because I'm not smart enough to get it.
Here's the thing about that. It's not about getting it.
Right.
It's about taking away something from it. And I think that's what's special about it. And I don't want to go into it any more than that, but I will say that everything posted has meaning and everything posted has value. And it is to the consumer. I think today we are hit over the head with so much hashtag and this is what's going on and this is what I'm trying to promote and this is what I'm trying to prove. It's literally just take this for what it is. And by the way, it is whatever you make it.
And you do it all yourself?
All myself.
Okay.
I have some Photoshop aid
right.
with some of the spectacular Photoshopping that's going on there.
You know, you do the Photoshop or you
No,
have,
no, I have some help.
I need help too with that, yeah.
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 But everything is the brainchild of
John Cena.
Yes.
Okay.
The Gram.
And Twitter, do you read your mentions?
Mentions. Yeah, all the time.
Oh, really?
That's how I told you I got killed in the hair.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll have to send you a tweet, see if you reply.
I don't really reply to people.
Right. Because, well, that's what I mean. Right.
Because it is a forum for conversation, and I just like to send the thought out there.
Right.
But I think it's a great way to see how people accept your thoughts.
Yeah.
And so Instagram is used for what it is used for. Twitter is a great way for me to express It's been a great way for me to be vulnerable with the universe and be accountable for the things that I believe. I think once you throw them out into the universe, like, I feel like this. I can't wear Never Give Up in my sleeve and then go quitting stuff.
Right.
You know, without trying my best.
I agree. The quote, I enjoy the quotes on Twitter. I favorited one, I think, yesterday that I was, when I was looking here, but of course now I'm not going to be able to find it.
Can I ask a question while you're looking?
Go ahead.
Well, because you brought up your younger self.
Yeah.
We're the same age.
Yes.
So 41-year-old John Cena.
Yes.
What advice would you give to your 12 or 13-year-old self whenever you got into wrestling?
Oh, I think I would just be keep doing what you're doing. Like I say, you know, I'm the wisdom that I have at 41. I'm sure I'll say the wisdom that I have at 60. I wish I could give to my 41-year-old right. self. But that wisdom is that weird gift that you have to just earn through life. You have to live life. And I've been very fortunate to be surrounded by people at an early age that allowed me to live life, from going to boarding school as a teenager to never being really chastised for my personality to being involved always with diverse groups of people from ethnic backgrounds, social backgrounds, from financial backgrounds, always been in the center of wonderful team activities where nothing truly relies on the individual and it's a lot team-based. And I consider WWE the same thing. Even though we have individual superstars, even the best superstar needs a wonderful opponent to get in there and make the performance wonderful. So I don't know. And in that profession, I've had a chance to see the world and see different areas of the world and meet different people. So as a 41-year-old talking to my 13-year-old, I would just say, just keep living, man. Just keep living.
Okay. And one last one. Would you be a fan of John Cena, the wrestler?
I'm not sure.
Because we grew up in the time where you were either Hogan or Piper. Junkyard Dog or Terry Funk. You know,
So as a young boy, I absolutely would because I was a Hogan guy. But then, and this is why I understand, and I don't want to say I understand the audience so well, but this is why I can understand the audience's opinion. Because when I was a 19-year-old dude, I liked Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And for all the right reasons that a 19-year-old, so that's why I understand why there's resentment from 19, 30-year-olds, maybe even as young as 14-ish, like that rebellious teenage, there's nothing about me rebellious, nothing. And that's who I am. Like I'm not a true conformist, but I do not think that the system is out to get me. And my thing is literally, and this is just the way I live my life, honesty, show up and work hard and you will be rewarded for your hard work. I don't care what position you're in. I don't care who you work for. If you have the most nondescript profession and you kick ass, someone's going to be like, man, nice work. And repeat that process over and over again and you will get opportunity. And it's just a matter of being brave enough to be like, okay, this is going to be scary because it's not what I'm used to, but screw it, I'm going to go for it. And literally, that like I got my debut because The Undertaker was sick. You know, that's how I got the Ruthless Aggression thing. And then when that failed and I was about to be fired, Stephanie heard me rapping on the back of the bus and was like, hey, do you want to rap? And like that was embarrassing, but I was like, hell yeah, I want to do it. And not only did I do it, I went for it. I want to dress outlandishly. I want to look outlandishly because I could see that we were in an era of genuine, real performance. Everyone wore boots and everyone wore tights and everyone performed the same. I wasn't as skilled as those guys, but I love to entertain. And I knew if I looked different, at least that would make people go, that's the rap guy. And they did. And all I had to do was just perform at what I thought was giving everything I could night in and night out. And I haven't wavered from that philosophy at all, ever. If you show up and do good work, you'll talk to other people, be like, this person held me down. I can't give you a list of people who have liked me, who have not liked me. I care about the noise that I hear when I'm out in the pit, man, when I'm out in the ring. And all that politics BS is simply just that. We are in the model of WWE is the American dream. If you go out and you get a chance to perform and everyone stands up and makes noise, you did good. One of the best pieces of advice that Shawn Michaels ever gave me, it was loud, kid. You did really good.
All right. Now, hearing you say all this stuff, I was always surprised, and I guess it's stupid to be surprised considering the WWE is the ultimate reality show if you think about it, really. Yeah. But I was always surprised. I was surprised at first that you did Total Bellas, Total Divas, whatever mm-hmm. it was at the time. And then, I watched it because I was a huge John Cena fan, huge Nikki Bella fan, Daniel Bryan, Brie Bella, whatever. And I've said this on this podcast. I have written this for SportsIllustrated.com. You deserved an Emmy nomination for your work on that show. Now I'm sure you're going to tell me it was 100% real. But those scenes where you would say about, we're going to have coffee every morning, wine every night, don't do this in the house. Now, I don't know if that was acting, not acting, but it was brilliant. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I have to believe that was not 1,000% accurate. You probably have like an NDA with E, but I don't know what you can say about that.
What I can say is I'm glad you thought it was entertaining.
It was very entertaining. Yeah. I said, that man deserves an Emmy nomination, but I figured, you know, you probably can't talk too much about that.
No, that's
you did good, kid.
They were loud.
What were the rules? Coffee every morning, and wine before dinner. All right, that answers my question. That's all I wanted to know. Get John Cena an Emmy nomination for his work.
I wish you could see the look on John's face. He's just like, I can't remember.
I'm actually not kidding. You have to watch the brilliant performance of John on that show. And those scenes.
I'm glad you're entertained.
Yes. I was also shocked that your breakup played out so publicly, which maybe that's stupid considering you're two public figures. Did it ever get to a point where you said to yourself, like, I can't believe this is going on so publicly? People Magazine, Entertainment Tonight. The coverage was, you know, I mean, it was basically like, you know, Meghan and Prince Harry over there.
Before we walked into the studio, I told you I would give you honesty.
Yes.
That's all you're going to get from me.
Yes.
We're not going to talk about that.
Okay. That's fair enough.
Yes. That's my personal business, and I'll keep it that way.
I agree. Fair. I'm just talking about the coverage of it. Can we talk about that?
Nope.
No? Okay. I was going to ask you if you're on dating sites.
Somebody on the street just asked me about that. TMZ caught me in the street. And
I had it written down.
No, that's cool. TMZ. That's cool because...
let's just start with this. Can John Cena even be on a dating site? I would have to say no.
This is how people socially interact nowadays. Can I be on social media? Yes.
What's the difference between social media and Bumble?
Well, Bumblebee's coming out. It's a great way to promote Bumblebee by being on Bumble.
That is true.
Once again, the stigma of trying to be perfect when you're in the public eye. So millions of these people flock to these social sites because they don't know how to meet people. And they realize that it's an easy way to connect.
Right.
If I'm trying to meet someone, why shouldn't I be able to use this interface?
You should. Who's saying you shouldn't?
Because of what I do for a career.
Right. I don't think, who's saying you shouldn't though?
I think it's general perception that if you are in the public eye
right.
and you go to these connection sites that everyone else uses, somehow you are of lesser value as a human being.
Well, one, I love that you call it, would you call it general connection site?
This is people connect.
Yes. I like that term.
Yeah.
Listen, maybe I think that's old school thinking. I think in 2018.
You would be surprised, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, you would be surprised. Yeah. And like, I'm not currently on any dating sites, but I mean, like I certainly
not even Raya. That's all celebrities. You can be on that one.
I don't even know. I'm 41.
Tinder. You can't do Tinder. You're too big for Tinder.
See what you just said right there.
Yeah.
See what you just said right there. And this is the same person.
Yeah.
A minute ago, that said, this is 2018.
No.
There shouldn't be any perception.
What I'm saying is, I'm saying you need to find the right dating site.
No, you just proved your stereotype correct.
No, I think you should be on other ones. Tinder,
you're too big for Tinder. So if I were to use this application, you would think negatively about me because right now,
I wouldn't think negatively. I'd be worried about you. Because I think the women who are on Tinder... You want to be on like a Raya, which is celebrities. That's the dating.
No. I'd like you to finish your thought. The women on Tinder, what? Why would you feel worried?
Well, it depends what you're looking for. Are you looking for a wife, or are you looking for just a casual hookup?
I have no idea.
Well, if you want a wife, you're not going to find a wife on Tinder.
You don't know that. You don't know that. And by the way, you having that closed-minded opinion to that form of social networking is the reason that I can't use those apps.
I disagree. No, go on Bumble, go on Hinge. Go. There's plenty of apps.
You literally are proving the stereotype correct. Hey, no, no, don't worry about it. There's no stereotype,
Listen, here's the thing. This is a weird thing because you don't know me, but I feel like I know you. I feel like I'm friends with you. I'm worried about John Cena, my friend. I don't want you on Tinder. You're better than that.
You completely, with every word you're saying, are proving the fact that there is a stereotype that someone like me or someone in the public eye can't use these avenues of connection that millions of people find relationships
with. Well, I would say this. I would even go so far as to say this. Now I'll really get you mad. I don't think you can be in a serious relationship with someone who's not famous or a celebrity.
And
how's that for a ridiculous statement?
And there you have it.
There you have it.
You're
too big.
That's ridiculous.
I know you're going to say that.
No, that is absolutely ridiculous.
I'm talking about like a long-term could lead to marriage relationship.
I think that is so. The sadness and short-sightedness of that is so.
Well, that's why he wears glasses.
So horrible. Like, really. It's thinking like that that is what's wrong.
I'm getting killed.
No, that's just wrong. We're all human beings.
I agree.
A human being. Right. I mess up like everybody else.
But you have a lifestyle with travel and being on the road.
That's finding a person with similar values and beliefs.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That doesn't mean I can't not find someone like that through digital information.
I agree with that.
And that doesn't
mean... You're misinterpreting my concern.
No, you're hitting me right between the eyes with your interpretation. I can't be with someone who's not famous.
No.
Why? Because they don't value or believe
because
the same
things
that I do.
Because they're not going to understand your schedule.
That's totally not true.
All right.
That's totally not true. And I think you're not only are you putting my position on a pedestal, but you're undercutting everyone else that isn't in the public eye. And that's a shame.
All right. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Apology accepted. Thank you.
All right. Since I messed up there, let's talk about...
I was hoping you were going to hit him with a chair.
Well, let's talk about the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Sure.
That'll make up for my gaffe.
No, bro, trust me. I love an honest debate, but this is something nobody ever talks about.
Right.
Because celebrities try to keep that image. And it's a lot of the problem is on the celebrity themselves. Like I can't be seen doing that because it'll ruin my character. I'm a guy who can write a children's book, who can meet a kid with a life-threatening illness and have a wonderful connection with their family and drink a beer out of my asshole.
Right. We've seen it all.
Yes. Because I don't care.
Right.
I just want to do stuff that I'm passionate about and stuff that's good. And I don't, the Rolodex of, but this will ruin your career doesn't go through my mind. Like you said, at 41, I have a lot less Fs to give.
Right.
So when I hear stuff like, you can't do this, the question the guy asked me in the street about dating sites, the same one you had. Mm. My agent is right next to me, longtime friend. I've known him for 15 years. Right. We've done a lot of great business together. He turned white and started shaking his head. I'll answer every question.
Right.
And I'll answer it honestly and I'll answer it directly. Right. You want to breach something that I don't want to talk about? My answer is we're not going to talk about that.
Right.
I just feel that it's wrong for people to place us and or place anyone in the public eye on that level of like, hey, you can't do this. You're essentially not human. No, I'm human.
No. Listen, I don't want to fight with John Cena on my own podcast. I waited two years for this interview.
You'll
never do an interview with me again.
We're just having
a conversation. I will say this. You've said all this. You've kicked my ass. You've won the debate.
Mm-mm.
But you're still not on any dating websites.
It's also not about winning and losing.
I know. We're having a discussion. Yes. It's a discussion. That's why I don't argue with people on Twitter, because people think it's a fight and it's a discussion.
Yeah, it's about addressing the uncomfortable topic.
Right, but you're still not on any of the dating sites, I'm getting crap for my belief, but you're proving me right by not being on any dating sites.
Like any good person making a decision that has to do with the future of their life, I am researching everything make sure that I'm making the right decision.
All right, good answer.
So hopefully I can find some site of connection that fits my description.
All right, let's talk about Make-A-Wish.
Yeah.
When you started doing, because if you don't know, I'm sure you do, no celebrity has granted more Make-A-Wishes, than John Cena. When you started doing these, did you ever say in your head, like, I'm going to do more of these than anyone else? Or when did you get to the point? I know you didn't, but you had to have gotten to a point where someone may have had to have said to you, you know, you're about to become the guy who's doing more of these than anyone. I mean, how did it become such a staple for you?
The only reason that the staple is publicized is to raise awareness for the charity.
And it's a great charity.
for the longest time, I did so many of the make-a-wishes, and I didn't want anyone to say anything. And then WWE started publicizing its relationship with Make-A-Wish, and you could see the line move in monetary contribution. So while you publicize this, something, this connection is private and this connection is personal, mm-hmm. and you never want someone to feel like it's not. So that's very thin ice. But at the same time, the more awareness you bring to the charity, the more people will donate time and resources, which is how you make more wishes.
Right.
So the only reason you hear about a total and the only reason you hear my name connected with that total is so people can be like, I wonder what Make-A-Wish is like, and I want to find out more right. about that. And it works.
But also the, I mean, we've seen videos of you with, you know, the kids and, you know, how anyone could see that and not realize what a great organization it is.
And that's the hope.
And just you giving your time is, I mean, don't discount that. That's a, you know, you, your time is valuable.
No, and I don't mean just writing a check. If you want to volunteer your time, or
right.
I've also donated frequent flyer miles. There's a bunch of different stuff you can do to help make a wish.
Yeah.
And everyone reaches a point where they gravitate towards cause. And I think everyone hopefully reaches a point in their life where philanthropy becomes important. You talk to anyone who will do a podcast, and they'll probably say, well, I got this charity, or I'm supporting this cause.
Right.
Early on, I really developed a strong connection with Make-A-Wish. And I think it's wonderful because the kids chosen, it is their wish. It's not like you're an extra thing. Like, they want to meet this person, or they want to go to this place. And it's their one wish. And that wish can provide tremendous hope, and the power of hope can do some really, really cool things. So I've seen it, I've been a part of it, and I think once you're a part of something in a philanthropic sense that you feel special about, you just won't stop. And I, you know, having been successful at this for a long time now, I definitely could have developed my own charitable cause. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. I like Make-A-Wish. I really
like
what they stand for.
There's no company that does a better job with the charity stuff than WWE.
I mean, they do.
Connoisseur and at the Hall of Fame, they have the award now. I mean,
anti-bullying and reading challenges, and they really have become a nice cornerstone philanthropy.
I was lucky enough about a month ago, 2 months ago.
Special Olympics as well.
Yeah. We did something with Dolph Ziggler. Followed him around for a day, and he was doing something at a school here in New York, and. It just, the kids get so into it. They get so into seeing the WWE superstars.
I think that's a wonderfully unique thing about WWE, because it is this live, larger-than-life performance, but these people will actually come to where you are.
Do you know, it was a big deal when you got to 500. Do you know how many you're up to now with the
Make-A-Wish?
Yeah. It's over 500 Make-A-Wishes, is pretty amazing.
And I will, as long as I'm invited.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that I wish I could find a way to balance everything, mm-hmm. because I know the WWE fans' attention span is very short.
Mm-hmm.
And the longer I stay away from the product, the easier it is to forget me. It happens with everyone. And that's the one thing.
But the one thing about the WWE, I think, just as a fan, it does seem like everybody comes back. I mean,
no, that's true. That's true. But when you're in it on a daily basis,
and
when you're a regular full-time player, you have the opportunity to do more of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in trying to find balance for the next term of my life, that's the one thing that's difficult to manage. Like, how do I continue that? So I'm still trying to figure that out.
Switching gears, this is the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. So
this should be great.
And I know you're a Boston guy.
In a foreign country for 4 months. This conversation is going to be awesome.
Well, are you more, are you a Red Sox, Patriots, Bruins, Celtics fan?
This is going to be rotten. I have no geographical allegiance.
So you have no favorite teams?
I enjoy teams that perform well.
Right.
And I don't mean, I really enjoy the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
For the same reason I enjoy a program like Alabama.
Right.
To be able to perform well at an elite level year after year, regardless of setbacks, that says something about how you expect people to perform for you. Like, I just think the dynasty that is the New York Yankees is fantastic. And as a growing up in Boston, you're taught to hate the Yankees. But as every good guy needs a good bad guy, what would the Boston fans do without the Yankees?
Right.
And I don't think it's reciprocal. I don't think the Yankees are like, what would we do without the Red Sox? But
A little. I mean, they are the number one rival by far. I mean, in New York, here, I mean, I'm a diehard Yankee fan, and here in New York, you know, I've always said, you know, sometimes, you know, there's this thing with the Yankees and the Mets because they're both in New York. But I know as a Yankee fan, I couldn't care less about the Mets. It's all about the Red Sox for me. The Mets are irrelevant compared to the Red Sox.
And the fact they're in the same division.
Right. That's why it matters.
Many times they've been at the top, kind of, you know, vying for that top spot. I love sports stories.
Right.
And those stories in sport, I think, is what gravitates us towards. We were talking off air about, like, crazy instances of fandom. And I think all those fan superstitions are wonderful. That's how deep sports resonates with us. That's how aligned we are to these organizations and how faithful we are to these teams.
Give me, I'm sure you have many, but can you give me one crazy fan story where, I don't know, someone has come to your hotel room or someone has tackled you on the street? I mean, there's got to be something.
No super crazy moments. Just I'm really good about making people understand the situation. Like if people follow you into a bathroom and want to take a picture, I will absolutely be like, we're in a bathroom. I'm about to either urinate or urinate and defecate. You sure you want to kind of hang out right now?
All right.
Because that's what you're asking. So just making people aware. I think sometimes we see people and it's like, whoa, I didn't think I would ever see that person.
Right.
And we lose track of time, context, or like what's going on. So nothing super weird. By the way, I also understand that. The only times I feel bad are as if like traveling back and forth to Australia, a flight I could not miss. When I'm dragging my bags to the terminal and people are like, hey, man, you got 2 minutes? I don't.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I don't.
Yeah, I mean.
But it's I try to be as genuine as I can. You can follow me or like I don't.
Right.
And that.
But that's different. I mean, listen, if you're in an airport and you don't have time and someone comes
but
up to you.
But it's not different.
That's different than following you in a bathroom. I mean, can we have some manners here in society?
But at the same time, like a lot of times when working out, people will just, you know, a lot of times you feel like an exhibit. Mm-hmm. People will just have their cameras on all the time and. You kind of go through a little bit of arc of acceptance. You're very abrasive to it in the beginning, and then you kind of realize that, like, well, if those people weren't taking videos, I wouldn't be able to do my job.
Right.
So it just becomes the nature of the beast. And in the way that I live, if I need privacy, I have privacy. But when you're out, you're out.
Now, you've said you've lost about 20 pounds or so in China. Is that because of what you're eating? Working out differently?
Just working out differently. When I signed on for this movie with Jackie Chan, they wanted me to go over with the Jackie Chan stunt team and train for about a month. And in doing that, their main focus is flexibility, something that I'm not really skilled at. I don't know if you've seen me run before on WWE television, but it's quite awkward. So
at least you never fell like who did that, Titus?
Just jinxed me. So
when I fall. Yes. Listen, I'm not going to lie. As much as I am a huge John Cena fan, if you ran to the ring and fell, it would be good for me because I write a column every day on Sports Illustrated.
Cool.
We'd have a video to put in there,
no
and
problem.
I'd get good traffic. So thank you.
No problem. I'm not going to intentionally do that. But no, it was just I was used to training a certain way, and then added about 2 hours to 4 hours of additional activity every day. So it's basically like, hey, I drive 10 miles to work every day, and then your commute goes to 60 miles. You're going to burn more gas.
Right.
So I just am doing more work.
So I always like to ask athletes, especially ones in phenomenal shape, give me like a general roundabout what you eat in a day.
Sure. 240 milligrams of caffeine, 3.5 liters of water, 320 grams of protein, approximately 35 to 4,200 calories. Most of it dominated by protein and fat. I would say even close to 60, 90 grams of fat with 35 grams of carbohydrates, probably 35 grams of dietary fiber, and every multivitamin spectrum, hopefully within the USDA guidelines.
Okay.
Wow.
That answers that. Is that like a keto diet type of thing there with all the fat?
No, okay. I just try to genuinely, and that's the thing, like I don't have any secret. To performing, to nutrition, to health. I work hard and I do the stuff that sucks. Every day when I stretch, it's super painful, but my body feels great afterwards. And I eat things that I enjoy, but I eat healthy things that I enjoy. We all know what's crappy and we all know what's not crappy.
Right, right.
I just try to eat the not crappy stuff.
Yeah, I have the opposite problem, unfortunately. Do you follow The Rock on Instagram?
Follow no one on Instagram.
Oh, really?
Okay.
You're one of
those, or the gram.
Have you ever seen?
No, no. What, by the way, elaborate. One of those. What does that mean? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Throw us a bone and follow someone.
Why?
Enjoy the fun.
Why? Or follow no one.
Well, here's what I was. Here's what I was going to say.
Or follow no one and set an example.
Yeah, I guess. Interaction is good. Interaction is good.
I still have tons of interaction with people on Instagram.
You comment? You, like, reply to people?
No.
That's not interacting.
No, it is. Look at the comments.
Yeah, but you don't then respond to the comment.
It doesn't need a response.
Do you know the thrill someone would get if John Cena responded to them?
The thrill would be of orgasmic length, and then the experiment would be over.
And just that, like an orgasm.
And that would be that.
All right, the reason I asked if you follow The Rock on Instagram is because he posts photos of his cheat meals.
Oh, okay.
And it's usually like 87 pancakes and 57 chocolate chip cookies.
Loves me some pancakes, loves some cookies.
Yeah. So I was wondering, like, the John Cena, I can't say that, John Cena cheat meal is like, if you have a cheat meal and what?
I think, like, once again, I know the stuff that's not good and the stuff that's good. And I think when we use the term cheat, I hate that term because it just has a negative connotation. But when I decide to eat something not good, I know that it's not good. Right. I know I just can't eat it.
But if you're going to eat something not good, what does John Cena go for?
Love baked goods.
Okay.
Huge ice cream fan.
Yeah.
Like red wine. Huge red wine guy.
That could be healthy, though, if you do it in moderation.
That's everything's healthy in moderation, my man. Everything.
Could you have red wine once a day, or is that not moderation?
I've been known to go on a few day run of having red wine once a day.
There you go.
Yeah. I've also been known to go on a long run without any wine.
Right. Did I read? You're not a, no, that wasn't you. Someone else, not a beer drinker. That wasn't you. That was someone else.
I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Me either.
Yeah.
Wine.
Vodka. Yeah, I'm a big wine guy.
Yeah. So over in China, I don't know if you, I mean, I'm sure China. You don't have.
Over in China.
Isn't that where you are for 5 months?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm sure you don't have a ton of time to watch TV or movies, but are you doing like the Netflix thing to be entertained over there? Are you not keeping up with anything?
My entertainment is in being immersed in a new culture.
All right.
I barely watch television. Okay. If I do, I make sure it's, I just turn on the hotel TV. I watch CCTV. So it's in Chinese anyway.
So you're not watching any shows. John Cena's not watching whatever, Game of Thrones.
Baba Shaoto Erza, which is big head father, small head father, big head children. That's a popular kids TV show.
Oh, it's a kids TV show.
Yeah. Well, I like to get like to watch kids programming because the language is simple.
Right.
So I can kind of understand it. So
no Netflix while you're in China.
No, man. I'm just like, it was such a great experience and still going on. But yeah. I also wanted to give it the most. Like, I didn't want to go, oh, this is a great chance to binge watch whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is a great chance to be dropped in a country where I have no idea what's going on.
Right.
I can kind of speak, so I can kind of survive. Let's just see how it plays out.
How many languages do you speak?
Just two.
Just two.
Just two. And my Mandarin's about as good as my English, which is both pretty shitty.
I could keep going. I don't know if they have to, like, get you out of
time
here.
What time is it?
I mean, I could just talk about it.
Keep going. I'll tell you what. We'll give you a few more.
I just say, like, I've had enough. What'd you make of your match against The Undertaker? There was a lot of talk about that.
Just like the haircut.
Right, right.
There's talk about every time I perform.
Right.
And we're in a critical environment.
Right.
And if people aren't happy with my performance, they sure as hell can voice their opinion. I loved WrestleMania. It's one of the performances and lead ups that I'm extremely proud of because of the challenge of the story. It went from literally no one believing that the WWE would put a healthy John Cena on the bench to me in the crowd at 2 p.m. drinking beers with fans. And I said, I'm going.
Did you have security with you?
I told them to get the hell away from me.
So you were all by yourself?
No,
solo.
They were back because they didn't want to make it a liability.
Okay.
But I was in that section by myself. And it was awesome because WrestleMania, as you know, is long.
Right.
Very long. They opened the door at like, they opened the doors at like 2:30 and they wanted to just shuffle me out there at 5 p.m. for a quick on camera.
Right, right.
And then again, I said, no, I'm a fan. Give me my ticket. I'm going to my seat. And by the way, give me a beer and some stuff to eat because I know I'm going to be out there for a long time. And when you're around the same, 600 to 1,000 people, there's that rush of like, man, this guy's out here now. And then after hour three, like I'm literally nudging them, they're nudging me, like, ah, did you see that? That was great. it was awesome. I hope that one day every superstar can sit in the seats and be with the fans. It was a super rewarding experience, and I don't think that could translate to the home viewer, but anyone in my section will tell you.
I thought it was great. I thought it was very
cool. I loved it.
Yeah.
And for what it needed to be, my job in the performance was to make the Undertaker look like the Undertaker. Mm-hmm. And I believe we achieved that objective. And if someone critically thinks that we should have had more time, that's a better criticism than saying we should have had less time.
Well, not sure you could have much less. What has been, I don't want to ask, I want to keep things positive, but someone told me.
No, fire away.
Someone told me to ask you this. What has been your least favorite storyline or feud?
Not one. Because even sometimes you need to work a little bit more with performers than others.
Right.
But I think the thing with me is everyone knows that when I come out, they're going to get something genuine, and they don't necessarily know what I'm going to say or what other people are going to say about me.
Right.
And I've always let people just like, hey, do what you want. And to try to encourage somebody to be like, hey, this is the story I think we should tell. I think this will be interesting. To get them on the same page sometimes takes more work than other people. But once you have that agreement of like, this is the direction we're going, everyone is awesome. So I could tell you that I liked this story or this story or this story. I just told you that what I'm most proud of is being a fan.
Right.
So right. Like it's, I don't see anyone as a negative. And that's another thing that really irks me as a professional is when guys are like, I hate to use inside baseball, but it is Sports Illustrated. Yeah. They're booking me wrong.
Right, right.
Bullshit.
Right.
If you are given a chance, go down swinging. And I think one person who does this spectacular is The Miz.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny. It's very funny you mentioned The Miz because I think the best thing the WWE, from an entertainment standpoint, has done the last couple of years was the feud with Miz and Maurice, with you and Nikki, when The Miz, when they did the vignettes spoofing Total Bellas.
Yes.
I had The Miz on after that, and I told him I thought that's where I brought up John Cena should win an Emmy for Total Bellas, which I stand by. That was phenomenal. Did you have a hand in any of the stuff he did, or when you first saw it, was that the first time you were experiencing it?
So you have a choice. You can either be like, bring your best out there, or you can, I think it works much better when people put their minds together and say, how can we make this the best we can?
Right.
And keep in mind, there was some offensive things that I said about Miz, and then the repercussions were the spoof. And that the point of that story is we really had a long talk about this, and it was very much similar to the feud I had with Dwayne.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne is on his own planet, man. He is just, there's no one like him.
Right.
So when you face Dwayne Johnson, you have to try to become equal to Dwayne Johnson. Dwayne Johnson doesn't need to become any better. And in this situation of The Miz, seeing as we'd wrestled so many times before, we kind of had to bring them up a few notches. And the spoof was the perfect thing to show that he doesn't care. And he's willing to say whatever and
right.
do whatever. And it was super entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
that's what I'm saying. When you saw it, did you expect it to be that good? Or were you like, oh, shit, this is good?
No, I expected it to be great.
Yeah.
And you know what? In like the honesty that Mike had in telling me, like, this is what we think. What do you think? I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And the look on his face, like, you sure? Yes, I think it's going to be great. And then seeing his face, like, no better. Because when you talk about this weeks, months earlier, those are uncomfortable conversations because essentially you're like, this is what I'm going to come at you. This is what you're going to come at me. So sometimes if there is a bit of animosity there, those conversations can be very uncomfortable. But there's all of our performers will say the same thing. There is no better feeling than going out and knowing that you did well. And the noise you did, it was really loud. You did really good. There's like the smile on people's face and the feeling of internal happiness you can't hide. And I remember those vignettes airing and seeing Miz beaming, like at the very least I could make someone happy and give someone the confidence that they're like, hey man, you may be better and you may want to go at this a different way.
Man.
And this is how you may want to think from now on. He works his ass off And he makes even the most trivial storylines super entertaining.
Yeah.
That's the definition of a pro.
Yeah. And a fascinating background coming from MTV's The Real World. And
that doesn't matter.
Well, no, I'm just saying it's an interesting life that he's had.
He's had a fantastic, here we are talking about a children's book.
Yeah.
You know, so it doesn't matter. The fact is that he loves what he does and he's invested in it. I also think that it's, guys get a bad rap when they come into the business.
Right, not being that whole in kicked the out business. Of the locker room thing or something.
That's just a different culture, and I'm so glad that that doesn't exist.
That's over now?
Holy hell, yes it is.
Well, give me an example. You don't talk about his case. I don't want you. But give me an back in the day, what was something a WWE superstar could do that would get them heat in the locker room or piss someone off?
I don't know. It's just the culture of, like, we're a traveling family that works really hard and makes a lot of sacrifices to be in this job. We just want to make sure that you have the same passion we do. So anytime someone's passion was put into question, you kind of rock the boat a little bit. And nowadays, because of the way we recruit talent from NXT and the development they get in NXT, you're passionate about it when you show up, no matter who you are. And I think the thing that's finally been brought to the surface is, if you're not, you don't need the locker room to get upset. You will get crucified in front of the audience.
Right, right.
So they know if you're authentic or if you're not. And if you're not, they'll either boo you or they'll go up and get a hot dog. And in one essence, getting booed is good.
Right.
Going up and get a hot dog, not so good.
Well, that's the thing that Roman has going for. I mean, that promo after WrestleMania where they booed him for 20 minutes and he said basically three words and then went back to the locker room was...
And once again, confidence.
Yeah. Were you the first WWE superstar to have the bus to travel from city to city?
No. Okay. There was a few before me.
Okay.
But in trying to, we talked about logistics and time.
Yeah.
Certainly not cost effective.
Well, I was going to say, now that you're not a full-time superstar, where's the bus? What happens to the bus?
It's getting a nice rest.
Yeah.
Got a lot of miles. So we're trying to keep it under lease miles.
Yeah.
Which means I can't drive it another foot. So, I was on a quest, especially towards, I think probably when I hit about 34, I just couldn't go like I used to.
Yeah.
So I was on a quest to just buy time. And even now at 41, the biggest investment I make every single year is on buying minutes, buying more time.
Right. Yeah. Well, they always say time, you know, I heard, it was a very good interview. James Corden, I don't know if you're a fan of his. He was on Howard Stern about a year ago and talked about how he has this whole thing about how time is more important than money. And I've always known it, but the way he explained it, it hit me about how true that is.
Money can be a great vehicle to buy time.
Right. All right. Well, I've kept you long enough. So Elbow Grease, let me get back to it because that is why you're here.
Appreciate
it. We've covered everything in between.
We have really covered everything in between. Yeah. Are you happy with everything?
I feel bad that I, you know, insulted you about the dating site.
Look at this,
but it's okay.
Making you feel guilt, which is awesome. Because now maybe you reevaluate your opinion on, like, hey man, do I treat celebrities unfairly? Do I treat people in the public eye unfairly? Do I treat women on Tinder unfairly because of how I view Tinder? Like, you'll go back and look at all these things. Listen, the cool thing about
it's not this. About women. Men are animals on Tinder too.
Do I treat men wrong on Tinder? Do I treat dating sites wrong? Like all this stuff. That's what's good about the conversation, man. No bad blood. I love being able to talk about this stuff. And I think the biggest thing is addressing the uncomfortable situation.
I thought it'd be like a funny little question because you did have this public, very public relationship that ended. So how does
a 41-year-old get back in the dating game? I don't know. I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, at least you have a topic for like your young adult book
now,
are you
going to rip me if I say it would be easier for a 41-year-old who's John Cena to get back in the dating? Well, actually, that's not true. It's probably... You got a lot of issues.
See, look at this. That's awesome because you were just about to stereotype.
Like you can't go into a bar.
Like, bro, it'll be great. You'll be easy. No, wait a second. No, wait.
Right.
It may be different.
But that goes back to why I think a celebrity is probably best for John.
Once again, I just would... You should choose your words
carefully.
Can
you go into a bar and have a drink?
Yes.
You can?
Yes.
But you don't tell me you don't get recognized at all.
I go to dinner... myself a lot. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things that I love.
But do you say, give me the private room in the back? Or
no,
do you
not
sit
at
right
all.
In the middle
I go right to the bar. Right, I go right in the middle of everything. And people are genuinely good. And I guess I'm a half full type of guy.
Do you think it changes though from where you are? Like, are some cities? Because I've had athletes tell me, like, in New York they can walk down the street, no one cares. But if they're in LA and they walk down the street, people flock to.
But define caring. Like, okay, so this is what I want to say.
Well, like, we were on the street when you got here, and I saw people with the phone. The phones came out right away. People taking photos.
So whatever, I'm out. So yeah. Like, when I leave the house, that comes. I hope that's always there.
Right.
Because if that's always there, that means I can still work.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I mean by people are good is all they really want to do is say hello.
Right.
And if I'm out enjoying myself, especially alone, that pretty much means that time is on my side.
Right.
So if you want to come over and say hi, totally cool.
All right.
And like, I think that's the thing that people don't get. Like, that's why I sit at the bar mm-hmm. and not a private room mm-hmm. because I'm not an unapproachable person.
Right.
If I have to be somewhere or if I'm in the middle of doing something, schedule comes first. Like, hey, this is my livelihood. Right. I kind of got to attend to my livelihood. You feel like hanging around till after? No problem.
All right.
But genuinely going out, like that, I'm very grateful for that problem. Hey, man, you have a bunch of people that know you and would like to meet you, and you've affected their life in some way.
Well, if you're on all day, like let's say today, for instance, you did the Today Show. You're doing this. You're doing the book signing.
We got an event at Random House. We do Fallon. Then right. We do a book signing after that.
Elbow Grease out today. Picture book about perseverance.
And I thank you.
Yourself.
I thank you.
And it's 10 o'clock tonight. You may want to go have a drink and not be bothered.
No, I will. But I'll, okay. Like, if I want to go.
There are days you've got to be exhausted, though. And
so those are the days that if I do want to drink in private,
right.
I will stay in private.
Okay.
Like, I have a hotel room. If I need to shut the door,
right.
And that's that, okay. I will go there.
Right.
If I go to a public place, I assume that I'm in public.
All right. You want to go watch Yankees Red Sox tonight somewhere?
I really want to do this book signing in Barnes & Noble
okay.
because I really want
that's
to meet a ton,
right.
a ton of people that are interested in
my
Elbow.
Feelings aren't hurt. I didn't expect
so,
to
so, you know, I would, but schedule takes precedent. We're doing the book signing after Fallon, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. So you are doing it tonight. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Will you watch Yankees Red Sox tonight or you
no.
don't care? Okay.
It's not it's not the most important thing in my evening. The most important thing in my evening is meeting people who are fans of the book.
Well, the book is Elbow Grease, and it is out now. Give me the age bracket you think it's...
Young readers. Yeah. Okay, so this is not exactly a venue to look for young readers, but I know there's a lot of family folks out there.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of parents out
there. Well, the people listening to this
have kids.
Probably
a lot of uncles out there. Oh, my friend's got a kid or whatever. Yeah. It's a wonderful story that you can take a bunch of stuff away. It doesn't hit you over the head with anything special. It's about a crazy universe filled with lifelike monster trucks that are fun for kids to read, and they can take away like crazy definitions of the word gumption and elbow grease, which is always fun.
And do we have a date on when you will be in a WWE ring again or Monday?
So I have to go back to China to film this movie. I will be done the movie November 25th. But they've carved out time, just like they did for Australia. I will go to Crown Jewel,
Arabia,
which is
right?
November 2nd in mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia. And then Bumblebee Global Promotion starts November 26th. So I'll come home from Beijing on the 25th and then head back out the 26th. And I believe that tour includes, if I'm not mistaken, Berlin, UK, Korea, Hong Kong, LA, New York, Miami. So that'll probably take me up to about the 21st when Bumblebee comes out. That's December 21st. If you want to see Bumblebee, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
And then after that, I kind of don't know what's going on. There's a few things that may be some opportunities to come up. And if they come up, I believe that I'm going to take them. And if they don't happen, which always happens in the movie business, then I will return home, which I'm very anxious to do anyway.
Are you open to any role in the movie business?
No, I if you saw
you were great in Trainwreck.
Thank you very much. If you saw any of my early stuff, I was soured on the movie business very early.
Okay.
And I think that was just by trying to appreciate and please my boss who was trying to develop a business model. So I did a lot of projects that I didn't like. I love performing live. It's what I love the most.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've been fortunate enough to have a few movies where people are like, I liked you in that movie.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a lot more choices on the projects that I do. And making a movie isn't just making the movie. It doesn't stop when they say you're wrapped.
Right.
I'm doing a month's worth of promotion.
Yeah.
So if you don't like what you're doing, not only is every 12 to 16 hour day going to suck, but then when they ask you to do these podcasts, it's also going to suck.
Yeah.
You can tell I like the book because we've been talking for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's really important for me to like what I do.
Yeah.
So
I'm saying, would you do a serious movie role if it was?
I'll do anything.
Okay,
I'll do anything. Like, yeah. and that's
because Dwayne seems very focused on like one genre.
No,
right
but that's
now.
Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
I'm just wondering.
My thing is, step one, read it.
Yeah.
And my litmus test is if I can read it cover to cover in one sitting, because I'm a slow reader, and if I can read a 120-page script in one sitting, it's like, whoa, all right, who's working on this? And then you kind of find out the infrastructure, and I want to never be the smartest guy in the room, so I want to be surrounded with great people. And surround myself with a great team, and then hopefully everything lines up so you don't overlap anything, and they allow you to. And then my question is always, well, can I carve out a few dates to do to go back home?
Right.
Like carving out Australia and Saudi were very important to me to be able to be at those shows.
Yeah.
So it's a big balancing act, but it's something that I enjoy, and hopefully I'll be able to. It's a good first world problem to have.
Yes, definitely. So. Well, I really appreciate the time. I'm very grateful for all the time you gave me for this interview. It was very lengthy, and
yeah,
I
no
appreciate
problem, man.
It
took you what, two, three years to get
2 years to get
yeah, so I figure we see you in another 2 years.
I was hoping for Bumblebee. I was gonna be like, let's make, hopefully
we're in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
we're in the neighborhood.
Yeah. I do appreciate
it. I'll tell you what, let's see how this one does. I don't know if anyone's gonna listen. I think we've just been wasting airtime.
I totally disagree.
If you get decent traction on this, don't lie to me. I have people that can check your analytics. I don't see why we couldn't conversate again.
I would.
But if
really
it's a waste of both
that.
Of our time, we all know that time is
well,
the
here's
most
the deal. You know
around.
What? I am at the point now where like even if no one listened to this, I enjoyed this. So
yeah, but in that case, let's just meet for coffee.
I said let's go watch Yankees Red Sox tonight.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But I just can't make it.
All right, coffee then. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
All right, I appreciate it. All right, John Cena, my new best friend. Here's the thing. This is not an insult to you. No, I got to preface.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Wait.
This moment of, with all due respect.
Wait. So like
I've had this thing.
You're ahead. Stop.
No, it's okay.
I've had this running thing on Twitter. It's a total gag type of thing on Twitter where I'm obsessed with The Rock.
Okay.
To the point where I got The Rock. Somehow I scammed him into following me on Twitter, and in my Twitter bio I say The Rock follows me.
Okay.
The Rock is out. John Cena is my new best friend.
No. Yes. Don't do that. Let's not do that.
The Rock will never do this podcast, ever.
By the way, never say never, and I think you're selling yourself way short. He's a phenomenal dude. He's the hardest working guy in entertainment. He's certainly, I'm inspired by him like hundreds of millions of people around the world, and never say never.
I'll never tell you, man. I'm going to tell you a very funny story that happened 2 weeks ago. Since you were in a movie called Blockers, you can appreciate this because I felt like I was blocked. So I get an email. it says, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's new show interview opportunity. So now the heart's racing a little bit.
Yeah.
The blood's pumping.
Yeah.
I open the email. And it was a very nice publicist. And it was like, hi, Jimmy. I see you're a big fan of The Rock. I saw your Twitter that he follows you. It's very funny. I have an opportunity for you. The Rock, he's hosting this new game show on NBC.
Yes.
We'd love for you to come down and you can interview. Now, at this point, I'm shaking. I'm like, I'm finally going to interview The Rock. And it's like, you can interview the executive producer and one of the other co-hosts. And it was just, and then I just crashed. Because I thought
it
was going to be.
Why didn't you take it?
Well, no, I didn't take it because it was in L.A. I'm here in New York.
Okay.
I did write back and I said, is there an interview opportunity with Dwayne? And they wrote back and said, no.
Okay.
And I said, I can't go to my boss at SI. Say, can you pay, you know, a couple of thousand for me to fly to L.A. to interview the executive producer?
We're about to dive into what's called a teachable moment.
Like. I was just going to say the same thing. As somebody who's been a producer for years, you take the
C-level. I know, and then maybe The Rock.
In order to get to the end.
It was literally 2 days before. I would have had to fly out.
But you say, hey, listen, can we do it over the phone?
So what have we been talking about this whole time? Opportunity knocked at your door.
Right.
And you gave excuses on how to keep yourself comfortable. If they won't pay for the ticket, and it's something, if it's something you really want to do, if it's a life goal.
No, but there was no interview with Dwayne.
Wait. If it's a life goal to interview The Rock, and this is opportunity to talk to his co-executive producer and a co-host of the show,
right.
I would have paid for it myself.
Right.
I would have been as polished as I could have been. I would have knocked the interview out of the park. Because if you don't think those two people don't talk to Dwayne and or their publicity team, you're insane.
Well, here's the
thing. So when they ask about like, hey, I was the guy from Sports Illustrated. Wow. He was fantastic. You don't just say, I want to play baseball, and they throw you a cap for the Yankees. You have to crawl through the crap and come out clean on the other side. And if you really wanted to do this, if this is really a goal in your life,
right.
not like I want my boss to pay for it. If your goal is I want to speak to the rock, why wouldn't you invest in the channels to do the legwork to speak to the rock?
Because I know how this business works. I've done podcasts
again,
for a long time.
An excuse to keep yourself.
No, I would not have gotten the rock. The rock is not doing it.
You don't know that.
He's never done a podcast.
It doesn't matter. You wouldn't have gotten him today.
Plus,
you wouldn't have gotten him 2 weeks ago.
But here's the thing. I knew in my head, in 2 weeks, I've got John Cena. I don't need the rock.
Once again, an excuse to keep yourself comfortable. I went to China the first time in 2010 and looked around and asked a question. Why isn't WWE here? All I see is people. Live entertainment is at its peak. These people enjoy being entertained. And in 2010, I publicly said, I will get the WWE in China. 8 years later, and I still have failed. Failed. And I do not give up. We won one event a year. We have, I believe there's so much room for expansion in licensing, in television presence, and especially in live event presence. 8 years of me working my ass off, studying the language, living over there, and I still have failed. But it is something I want to do.
Failed? I think it's something you just haven't accomplished it yet.
You know what? It would be easy. It just didn't work out. No, it's been 8 years. Eight years.
Who's blocking that? Vince or
it's not logistics? A block. It's not a block. It's just the fact that the culture has to understand what we do. And I am doing everything, including changing my offensive repertoire to try to involve Mandarin and try to connect the two cultures because I believe in the Chinese culture and their acceptance of what we do. Once we get there, I think it's going to be huge. I may go off into the sunset having failed at this goal, but I can tell you damn straight, I've done everything I possibly can. I took a 13-hour flight to spend 9 hours on the ground in Shanghai to perform the last time we had an event there, just to take a 13-hour flight back to go back to work. And I do it again in a heartbeat. Right. Why? Because it's a goal of mine. And it's one that's not financially rewarding. I see very little of that. If the WWE becomes a success in China, the current generation will see financial reward from there. So it's not about money.
Right.
It's I said I want to do this, and I really want to do it. And I'm taking all the steps possible to do it. So when you ask yourself, oh, I want to talk to The Rock, do you really?
Oh, I do.
No, you don't. I'll tell you right now, you don't, because you had a chance and then you're like, no, I'm good.
No, I didn't have a chance.
You did.
I think there'll be a time where he's promoting a movie and I'll be able to get him for an interview. I don't think he'll ever do a podcast. He doesn't do podcasts because I know, Stone Cold's asked him. He doesn't do it. JR's asked me. He doesn't do it. He's going to do those guys before he does me. He doesn't know me from a hole in the wall. He's friends with those guys.
If you're listening at home, please listen to the amount of excuses. This will never happen. John, it's not going to happen because of this. It's not going to happen because of that.
I'm thinking to myself.
By the way, it may never happen.
Right.
But if you try your absolute best.
I will try.
If you try your absolute best over a long period of time and it still does not happen,
right.
then it certainly wasn't because of lack of effort on your part.
Right.
How did you get The Rock to follow you?
It was really embarrassing.
Okay.
It's
fine. Let's embrace it.
Well, okay. So I have gotten many replies from The Rock on Twitter because I do write about him a lot on SI.com. Okay. So in the back of my head, I figured the guy knows who I am because it's Sports Illustrated. I know he respects Sports Illustrated. He was on the cover, and he retweeted and replied to me a bunch of times.
Okay.
So I said, it was my birthday. I said, the only thing I want from my birthday is a follow from The Rock.
Okay.
He was nice enough to follow me,
okay.
which was a big deal. I think I deserve credit because I've been professional and mature and have not slid into his DMs and said, can we do an interview? I don't want to bother him. He's The Rock.
So I asked you how you got The Rock to follow you.
Yeah.
And this was your response. I have covered The Rock's career multiple times.
Yeah.
I have written multiple articles about The Rock,
right.
to which he was very happy with.
Yeah.
And he always admired my work and what I had to say about him.
A little bit of a stretch.
But. And over a long period of time, at the end of a long period of covering his career, I asked him for a favor.
Right.
That probably should have never happened.
Right. Well, I shouldn't have asked. I mean, it's so douchey.
It's not.
Eh.
And he granted it.
I was shocked. I didn't think he'd even see it.
So
I was shocked.
So for you not to get that it works
right.
after that, I just don't see it.
You have to.
It didn't. You couldn't not write an article and just say, "Hey, man, follow me for my birthday." You put in the time to establish a relationship.
Right.
You admire the dude. You certainly cover his work. You were kind with your words, and you weren't douchey with your ask, like you said. You didn't haunt him on his direct messaging.
Yeah.
You took as professional an approach as you could.
I appreciate that.
But at the same time, embracing that embarrassing moment of like, "Hey, man, I really do dig you. Could you follow me on my birthday? It would mean the world." And he did.
It was really more of a Twitter gig. I didn't think it would happen.
In the same amount of work
to
try to speak to this guy.
All right, I will do that.
Time under tension over a long period of time. I'm not saying it will happen, but I'm saying you're certainly going to have a better chance.
Listen, the bottom line is this. Even though we had a little dispute about the date, the Rock's out. John Cena's in.
No.
That's it.
No.
John Cena's in.
No.
You don't want it?
What I don't want you to do is keep yourself in a comfortable spot and give up on something that you actually want to do. Because I will tell you this, having talked to Dwayne a bunch of times, every time I see that dude and can sit with him, he has what he says he has, electricity and energy. And when you sit and talk with him, you are inspired. So I don't know how he's going to change your life, but I know he's going to do it. And if you can talk to him and you put the time in to talk to him, you'll walk away going, man, that was a great experience. And if you put in a ton of time to talk to him and it doesn't work out, you will learn something from the experience. Also of value to you. I just don't think it's a waste.
All right.
So don't switch the leaderboard yet. I'm always number two in a lot of people's eyes. So keep me as a big number two. And I'm happy there. I'm happy there. That's great. Keep that, dude, but just work towards it. If it's something you really want to do, please work toward doing it. Just do like Elbow Grease does. Never give up.
I was going to say, the message from John Cena, never give up.
How
there
about
you go.
That?
Well, Elbow Grease, picture book for kids. It's out.
Is that another 90 minutes? Have we sunk the ship?
No, this is perfect.
This is awesome. Thank you so much.
I actually do have to make my exit because I think I have to do some things.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to do something that makes me lose track of time.
I'm just going to say that wraps up this edition of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My thanks to John Cena. Phenomenal.
You can't see him.
And we'll see you next week.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.